Good afternoon. Thank you for your time today. I'm looking forward to not only sharing some of the things that we've learned at Catalyst Center, but also hearing your questions and comments during our question and discussion period. I'm very much interested in what you all are seeing out in the field and what your research questions are, where you feel you need data and information. A lot of what I'm going to talk about today, Kathy has already covered for kids in general. I'm going to spend a little bit of time focusing in on children with special healthcare needs. The reason for some of this redundancy is children with special healthcare needs are children first and foremost, and also we think of them as the canaries in the coal mine. So this special focus on a special vulnerable population makes a lot of sense for us. If something is working for children with special healthcare needs, it's probably working for kids in general, and if the opposite is true, then probably it's something we should all be looking at. I have no money, I have nothing to confess. That's pretty straightforward. For those of you who are not familiar with the Catalyst Center, I'll just spend 2 seconds on who we are, what we do, sort of establishing my street cred. We're funded by the Division of Services for Children with Special Healthcare Needs at the Maternal and Child Health Bureau. We are 100% federally funded, so we are nonpartisan. We are federally funded, we are not advocates. We're an independent research and technical assistance group that does happen to work for the feds. We are a project of the Health and Disability Working Group at Boston University School of Public Health, so ours is an academic focus, but we do the overwhelming majority of our work with states, state Medicaid programs, state Title V programs, private insurers within the states, with other affiliated stakeholder organizations like the AAP and AMCHIP and APHA. We are the national center that is dedicated to working on the outcome measure. MCHB has 6 core outcome measures for children with special healthcare needs, and we're dedicated to all children and youth with special healthcare needs have access to adequate health insurance coverage and financing for the care that they need. So different systems think about children with special healthcare needs in different ways. So just to make sure that we all have a shared understanding of the population that I'm talking about today, let's take just 2 seconds to think about the federal MCHB definition. You'll see that this is a very broad definition. This is a very inclusive definition. It includes all aspects of health, mental, physical, behavioral, developmental, all of the different components of health that you would think of for a child. On the one hand, it's wonderful that when we start a project in this area, or when we start a conversation, and we start an initiative in this area, when we start a research project in this area, we don't have to spend the first 3 years working on figuring out who we're talking about. We use this definition so we know who we're talking about. One of the challenges, though, is because this is such an encompassing definition, it can be hard sometimes to drill down and think about specifically what's happening with individual subpopulations of children with special healthcare needs. So the coverage status for children with special healthcare needs prior to the ACA, about 11 million kids from the National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs in 2009-2010 told us about 15% of all kids have special healthcare needs according to the MCHB definition. That's about 11 million kids. This is not an insignificant number of kids. Their coverage picture looked pretty good. Obviously, for that 3.6% of kids who are uninsured, that is a huge concern and a huge issue, but the total number of kids with special health care needs who were insured in some form or another was 96.4%, which is pretty good. The American Community Survey, or ACS, for 2009 put the uninsurance rate for children in general at 8.6%. And the same survey had the uninsurance rate for adults at 20.6%. So, especially in comparison to adults, kids with special healthcare needs were doing really well when it came to coverage. Even in comparison to kids in general, they were doing really well in terms of coverage. So, thinking about children with special healthcare needs now, we don't have a new National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs to work with yet. I understand from the folks at the Data Resource Center, the DRC, that they're projecting 2017 for the next iteration of the National Survey of Children's Health and the National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs. We're all just on the edges of our seats waiting for that data. We're so excited. Poor Christy Bethel gets emails all the time, when, when. harassing her has become, you know, part of my regular job life. We're all very excited for that. In the meantime, though, what do we know about kids in general? Because as I said in the beginning, children with special health care needs are children first and foremost. Right now, a new survey, a new look at the ACS, which the Georgetown Center for Children and Families just came out with last week, tells us that right now, post-2014, full implementation of the ACA, the uninsurance rate among children is 6%, which is an historic low. But 4.4 million kids remain uninsured. That's 4.4 million kids too many. The interesting thing for me in this data, you know, that's the part that touches my heart. That's 4.4 million too many. But the part that touches the data geek in me, 50% of those kids live in just six states. And that's Texas, California, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. States that have expanded Medicaid eligibility for uninsured adults reduced uninsurance for children by almost double that compared with states that did not. So every state reduced uninsurance for kids, but if you were in a state that expanded Medicaid for adults, you did better in reducing uninsurance for kids as well. So I want to talk a little bit, Kathy spent some time talking about the EHBs, the essential health benefits. I want to talk a little bit about an aspect of that that's specific to children with special health care needs, which I spoke of last year as a concern. This year, we've had some movement on this topic, and I want to just tell you a little bit about it. So we've had some great news with regard to coverage for kids. That's a critical component, but at the Catalyst Center, we've identified three critical components for insurance for kids with special health care needs. That's access, it's getting insurance, it's affordability, and it's adequacy. And one example of the importance of adequacy for kids with special health care needs, which was highlighted by the ACA, was habilitative services. So you may recall Kathy talked a little bit about the essential health benefits. The ACA had these 10 categories of services that were deemed essential in the qualified health plans. If an insurance company is going to sell a product through the marketplace, through the state health insurance marketplaces, the qualified health plans, they have to include these 10 categories of benefits. If an insurance company is going to sell a product on the individual or small group market outside of the marketplaces, they also have to include these 10 categories of health services. The ACA did not define scope, duration, definition of the essential health benefits. We just got this list of categories, which Kathy had a slide showing you. It's a great start. So how do we figure out what actually happens? The devil is in the details when it comes to benefits for kids, and what gets paid for, what doesn't get paid for. States were given the opportunity through HHS to choose one of four kinds of plans to use as a benchmark to model their essential health benefits on. These were existing 2012 plans, so they didn't all include all of the 10 essential health benefits because they hadn't had to do that before. So states had to figure out how to supplement or include those benefits that were not already in the benchmark plan. And the place where the real pressure point, the real sticking point for CSHCN was around habilitative benefits. We all know rehabilitative benefits are those therapies and services, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and devices that help regain function. Habilitative benefits are those same services, but they have a different outcome. They have a different goal. It's not to regain function because the function wasn't there to begin with. It's either to hold on to what a child has in terms of functionality or to gain a new skill. So a child who's never talked, who's getting speech and language therapy, that's a habilitative therapy. Habilitative therapies were very, very thin prior to the ACA in many insurance plans, and in fact, the overwhelming majority of insurance plans. Rehabilitative benefits were there because insurance was originally designed to address acute healthcare issues, right? Catastrophic stuff that happens, not chronic illness, chronic disease, chronic issues. So states are tasked now, you've got to choose a benchmark plan, okay, so they did that. The benchmark plan doesn't include the habilitative benefits because it didn't have to before. What do states do? HHS said you either have to supplement states, you have to supplement in some way and tell us how you're going to do that, or insurers can figure it out for themselves. They can propose a way to define habilitative benefits. As you can imagine, this did not go terribly well. Habilitative benefits continue to remain very thin. So, I'm going to skip a lot of that wonky detail about the EHBs because I don't know that you need to know about it or want to know about it. Let me just say that since I was here last time saying this is an issue, this is a problem, how are states going to continue to define habilitative benefits? How are we going to work this problem? HHS has come out with a uniform habilitative services definition. So this is a new rule. It defines habilitative benefits as occupational, physical, and speech and language therapies and other services. So those of you who are interested in kids with autism and are thinking in the back of your minds, ABA, yep. It also includes coverage for devices, which is really exciting and interesting. So if a kid needs a Dynavox, he's getting speech and language therapy, and he needs a Dynavox, he needs some kind of communication device, that is supposed to be covered under the EHBs. There has to be parity between habilitative and rehabilitative benefits, and there can be no benefit substitution between rehab and HAB benefits. Previously, states were allowed to offset one or the other. You could have a really robust set of rehabilitative benefits and be really thin on habilitative benefits if they had the same basic actuarial value. That's not allowed any longer. And so this is really exciting. This is going to be starting for plans in 2017. So this is a step forward. Now, do we really know if this is going to address the problem of thin habilitative benefits? Thank you. We don't, but it's at least a step in the right direction. And it's something that we can focus attention on when it comes to research and when it comes to data gathering. Kathy talked a little bit about she talked a lot about the Children's Health Insurance Program. CHIP was reauthorized up to 2019 under the ACA, and CHIP funding was reauthorized until 2017 under MACRA. This is really good news for kids and for kids with special health care needs. One, because CHIP is affordable. If you think about the spectrum of health insurance, you have Medicaid here on this end with really robust benefits for kids and really, really low, if any, cost sharing. And then over here you have private insurance, really expensive and tough for a lot of families to afford and maybe not so great, not so robust benefits. In the middle here is CHIP. Pretty good benefits and pretty good affordability. So this is good news. CHIP was designed with kids in mind. So all of the benefits are pediatric focused, which is really wonderful, which you don't see in private insurance. And especially, as Kathy pointed out, in the child-only plans offered through the marketplaces. That 23% enhanced matching rate was maintained in the new funding stream. So that is great for states. There are some states who are getting 100% of their CHIP program paid for by the federal government. That is really great. Doing something really good, getting kids into care, getting them the health care that they need, and it's not costing the state anything. This is all great, but it only goes to 2017. Is there going to be a new funding fight after 2017? As Kathy pointed out, these two-year increments are really tough for planning. Another thing to think about when it comes to CHIP and funding is MOE, the maintenance of effort provision, is going to expire in 2019. So when the ACA was passed, CHIP and Medicaid were frozen for kids. States couldn't make changes in eligibility. After 2019, they may be able to do that. They may want to do that because they're looking to control costs. What's that going to mean? Are some of these gains that we've been talking about going to be lost as a result of that? So we need some data. We are just finished with 2014 in terms of the first real full implementation year of the ACA. We still have a lot more data to collect. The data mining hasn't really started yet. There are transparency rules in the ACA that haven't really been operationalized yet. So the federal government has access to what's going on in the qualified health plans through their claims data. They haven't started accessing that yet. So it really will be interesting to see what happens when that data starts rolling in. What we want to know is, are kids with special health care needs, we know they're getting into coverage, but are they getting into the right coverage for their needs? We know they have issues with adequacy of benefits. Are they getting what they need covered? It's one thing to have something in, you know, the plans, PR materials, we cover this and we cover that. Doesn't really happen. Or are there lots of denials? Are there lots of refusals? Are there issues with network adequacy? And then there's payment and delivery reform, which is a whole new frontier for us all, value-based purchasing and value-based insurance design. What are the impacts of those going to be on children with special health care needs? They're primarily focused on adults with chronic illnesses and chronic conditions, but it's sort of, you know, those high-cost enrollees drive the train, and if children happen to be on board, that's great, and if they happen not to be on board, we don't know if anybody's going to notice. So these are the areas in which we really want to spend some time thinking in the future, and where we hope to have your help in thinking about what's going on in the individual states. This is the fine print, our funding, and that's the end of me.
Great, thank you.